Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and time for Health 360 Midday Matters here on 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sarah D'Elia and I hope you join today's conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-471-9264. You can email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post right on our Midday Matters Facebook page. In the studio with me, of course, is my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman.
Thank you, Sarah. Today we will be discussing retinal and macular diseases and degeneration with Dr. Matthew Farber, ophthalmologist specializing in diseases of the retina with Allen County Retinal Surgeons. Welcome, Dr. Farber.
Thank you.
We will be discussing a variety of retinal diseases today. We'll start with retinal tears and detachments, which require immediate medical attention. They have an incidence in our society of 5 new cases per 100,000 population per year, increasing to 20 per 100,000 in older populations. Individuals with severe nearsightedness have a 1 in 20 chance of developing these afflictions, which, left untreated, can result in vision loss or blindness. 40 to 45% of diabetic patients in the United States have some form of diabetic retinopathy, with 700,000 patients experiencing the more severe proliferative form of the disease, and 500,000 have associated macular edema, both of which can lead to blindness if untreated. Diabetic retinopathy is the leading cause of new blindness in our nation in persons 25 to 74 years of age, and diabetes is responsible for 12% of all blindness in our society. Poorly treated diabetes and lack of regular eye examinations, as well as increasing duration of the diabetes or increasing age since onset, can lead to vision loss or blindness. 28.5% of diabetics age 40 or older have diabetic retinopathy. Age-related macular degeneration is the major cause of severe vision loss in people over 60, affecting 6 to 7% of all Americans aged 40 or older, according to a recent study, and total numbers have can vary from 2 to 8 million people affected. And this is these numbers are growing with our aging population. Macular degeneration rarely causes total blindness, but can cause significant debilitating vision loss, greatly diminishing the quality of life of the affected individuals. Macular degeneration is a progressive disease with no current cure, but lifestyle and nutritional choices, as well as medical and surgical intervention, can slow or delay the onset of the more severe forms of the disease. Dr. Farber, what is the anatomy and function of the retina and the macula?
The retina lines the inside of the eye, almost like the way maybe wallpaper may line your dining room at home. It's nerve tissue sensitive to light. The macula is the part of the eye that is used for reading and color vision. As you were mentioning, macular degeneration may not cause entire darkness or blackness or loss of sight, but it hits you in your most critical area, the ability to read, maintain a driver's license. Often such people can maintain their ability to navigate and walk around, and they may see people in front of them in the severe form, they may not have the ability to determine exactly who it is that's standing in front of them.
So the macula, we use it for central sharp vision.
Exactly.
And how do retinal tears and detachments present? What are the causes, symptoms, and treatment, and the urgency of care here? And this apparently can happen at any age, but usually in the older population?
Well, I'll tell you, it can occur at any age. Certainly, a number of risk factors contribute to who may develop it. And frequently, people have new floaters. And thank God, most of the time, it's not of great meaning, but you never know. People at greatest risk, people that have had cataract surgery, people that are nearsighted, folks that have a family history. And then there's a hereditary condition where the retina may be thin, known as lattice degeneration. all such people are at greater risk. Sometimes people with none of the risk factors develop a retinal tear. So the only true safe practice is to be seen in an immediate fashion.
And what are they aware of? How does it present to them in the acute case of a retinal tear?
Well, most frequently, people develop new floaters. People describe seeing a hair, a bug, a cobweb. There may be flashes of light, known as photopsias. If this is indeed the start of a tear, it needs immediate attention. Untreated, the tear goes on and leads to a retinal detachment, causing a loss of side vision and eventually central vision.
And if untreated over the long term, could lead to blindness.
Well, frequently people end up most often in the operating room if they've lost vision, hoping that some vision will return.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're someone that does see one of those floaters, kind of the squiggly thing when you look into the sun or in a certain direction, I mean, how concerned should you be? Is there, you know, a reasonable amount of that everyone kind of sees throughout their day?
Well, I think the big determining factor is this new?
Oh, okay.
If this is something you've had for 5 years, I wouldn't lose any sleep over.
Mm-hmm.
But having had an acute retinal tear, suddenly you have 1,000 floaters. Suddenly there's flashing lights, and this requires immediate attention. What does the eye surgeon do with this patient? And the goal is to prevent the tear from going into a detachment. What is the therapy, the immediate therapy?
Well, initially it's to determine, is there a tear? And if so, most frequently it's treated with laser or possibly with cryopexy or extreme cold to seal the tear off.
So you're basically welding the retina around the tear to keep it from opening into a detachment.
Exactly. Yeah.
And again, the message here is if you see a sudden change in your vision, get medical attention, call your family doctor, your eye doctor immediately, because this would require a rapid resolution with surgical intervention. What about diabetes? We have an extreme number of people in our society with diabetes. The numbers are increasing. How does diabetes cause retinal disease and vision loss?
Well, that's a good question. Diabetes damages blood vessels, and this is really true throughout the body. Just as some people may develop neuropathy, resulting in stinging or burning or eventually loss of sensation in your hands or feet, blood vessels are damaged by the disease, and it's far more common when the blood sugars are elevated. This can occur in the kidneys, and you end up losing protein in the urine and eventually may lead to dialysis. In the eye, blood vessels may be damaged. The normal blood vessels may be damaged and leak fluid or material, cholesterol, protein, and this may build up. Some people may even have 20/20 vision and have this occurring without their even knowing it. Sometimes blood vessels close off, and the eye, trying to heal itself, responds to this urgent message, I'm not getting enough blood and oxygen, and a signal is sent out causing new blood vessels to develop. And these new blood vessels, known as proliferative diabetic retinopathy, consist of abnormal, fragile vessels. They're more prone to bleed and sometimes can bleed and lead to a large loss of vision, sometimes requiring surgery to have the blood removed.
And it's been stated that all diabetics from of any age should have at least a yearly eye examination. What does the eye doctor see with a dilation eye exam? And even, as you say, even before the patient is experiencing visual loss, they will pick up the development of this.
Well, on the exam, we look for any evidence of leakage of fluid causing, say, what's known as macular edema, where there's fluid in the central vision area. There may be particulate buildup of material or these new blood vessels developing.
And they can even leak blood into the, in the more advanced cases, right, into the
there
vitreous.
There may be
the gel
scattered hemorrhages, yeah, right, and so on, yes.
And this is what leads to blindness eventually?
Well, or the what's known as macular edema. The macula absorbs this fluid, and it can't function properly.
What can the diabetic do to prevent the onset of diabetic retinopathy?
Well, really, what's true in the eye is also true in the kidney. It's microvascular disease. And the best way to prevent this is by controlling the blood sugar. It's not easy. It takes a lot of work. It's almost like a full-time job controlling the blood sugar. But attempting to get the hemoglobin A1C below 7 will reduce your risk for eye disease and these other complications.
So, once again, eating properly, keeping the sugar down, exercise, and obesity, and avoiding obesity, may play a role here. And what actually happens to the extent that the eye would require your surgical intervention? And what do you do when you intervene medically and surgically when we're having these abnormal vessels developing and bleeding?
Well, proliferative diabetic retinopathy has classically been treated with laser, as well as the macular edema. Now we've entered this age with the use of medicine, anti-VEGF therapy, that can also be employed to treat both macular edema and proliferative diabetic retinopathy along with laser.
And these drugs like Avastin, they basically cut down on the proliferation of these vessels. So you're injecting them into the eyeball?
That's right. It sounds easy, where sometimes people will say, I'll take the medicine, but it's not a pill or an eye drop. Mm. We numb your eye, we hold your eye open, and much to the relief of most patients, it's not nearly as bad as it sounds. Mm-hmm. And these medicines help stop leaky blood vessels and can shrink these new proliferative vessels.
Are you awake during that procedure?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow. I can't.
People are awake. Uh-huh. And as we all know, everyone, there's a large range of pain tolerance. Mm-hmm. And some people will say, wow, are you done? That's all? Mm-hmm. And of course, other people say, you know, I felt something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's not nearly as bad as it sounds.
And as stated, diabetes appears to be, cause of 12% of blindness in our society. These are in patients that are progressing in spite of care or are not getting the appropriate care that go on to blindness. Can if you get a patient early enough in the course of the disease, can you at least prevent blindness, if not vision loss?
Well, as with many disorders, it's sort of like a coach calling a play, and then the players have to go out and execute. And physicians can give advice and suggestions and prescribe medication, but in the end, diabetes in particular is related to the patient being an integral part of the care. whether they follow a diet, exercise, what they eat, how it's cooked, how much they eat. All of these are factors. So there are patients, if their blood sugars remain 300, it's going to be a big battle to maintain vision.
And when you do intervene medically and surgically, can you at least stop the progression if the patient is complying, doing everything they can to control their blood sugars, and they have been getting the regular exams, you've identified the proliferative retinopathy, can you at least prevent the progression, if not cure it?
Well, Peter, you know, in medicine, early intervention makes a big difference in so many fields. And this is true. If we have an opportunity to see someone early on and we're part of a team and the patient is able to gain better control of the blood sugar, that's essential. I mean, if the blood sugars are not controlled, right, laser or these other medicines that we have now just are not going to be as successful.
I want to remind our listeners that this is Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. And if you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are wide open. 1-800-471-9264 is the number to call. You can always post on our Midday Matters Facebook page or email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. It's 12:23. We need to take a short break, but we'll be back in just a few moments here on 89.1 FM, WBOY Fort Wayne.
On the next Fresh Air, how opioid painkillers came to be used in the treatment of chronic pain, like back problems, and what the consequences have been. We talk with New York Times reporter Barry Meyer, author of the new ebook, A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. And John Powers tells us about his favorite films at the Cannes Film Festival. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Drawing. Having trouble getting started?
When people tell me they can't draw or they don't want to draw, all I tell them is try drawing a cigarette on anybody in a magazine, and they always start laughing.
I'm John Donvan. Linda Barry joins us for the next in our series of Looking Ahead Conversations. That's next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Professional help to rid the internet of embarrassing personal details, but not everyone thinks these pros can deliver.
The promises tend to sound like we're going to sort all this stuff out for you, and the reality is that nobody can really guarantee to do that.
The business of managing online reputations later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. It's 12:26, and if you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-471-9264. You can post on our Midday Matters Facebook page or email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah DeLeon, and in the studio with me is Dr. Matthew Farber, as well as my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman.
Thank you, Sarah. We're now going to switch gears into age-related macular degeneration, which apparently affects 6.5% of people age 40 or older in our society. And Dr. Farber, what is macular degeneration in this form, age-related. Who does it affect? What are the causes? Genetics, family history, lifestyle, smoking, obesity. What sets an individual up for this? And then you can mention the different types of macular degeneration.
Sure. Age-related macular degeneration, again, involves the central vision area, the macula. People with a family history are at greater risk for this. Individuals who smoke place themselves at greater risk for this. The good news is we're all living longer. And as a result, there are more and more people who are at risk for this. Sometimes there's no family history. Perhaps their mom or dad never lived as long as they did. So there may not be a family history, but often there may be an older sibling, and sharing this information with a sibling is one of the best things that people can do, letting other family members know that if they developed this, they may have brothers and sisters also at risk. And that's true for macular degeneration or having had a retinal tear, since that too can run in families.
And it's been recommended that all people age 40 or over get a yearly dilated eye examination, because the macular degeneration in its very early stages would be asymptomatic, correct?
Oh, early on, after age 40, it may not be unusual to have the early start deposits develop known as drusen. And this can be hereditary. People that develop larger drusen, and certainly if they are pigmented, are at greater risk for macular degeneration.
And the drusen are how would you describe a drusen?
Well, the drusen are little deposits that develop. It's felt from a problem in sort of like recycling. When cones work, it's chemical. And there are these materials that can accumulate. So these deposits, the drusen, may grow in size and number. And as they do, you're at greater risk for developing macular degeneration. And at some point, new abnormal blood vessels develop. And no one really knows exactly why these develop. Often they develop under the retina. The layer under the retina, known as the choroid, is a very vascular tissue. Blood vessels can develop there, grow under the retina, leak fluid, and bleed. So probably one of the best things people can do is get in the habit of covering one eye and then the other. Perhaps look in the mirror and wink at yourself, or in the course of reading or playing a computer game, cover one eye and then the other. And if you become aware of distortion, blurring, a decrease in vision, something new, whereas both eyes formerly were the same and now one eye is better, you want to find out how come the other eye isn't functioning as well as it did. You don't need to wait till you go to the Motor Vehicle Bureau and have them tell you one eye isn't working.
And they might see a gray spot in the middle or squiggly lines, and you have the grid that you have patients
right,
look at.
Sort of just like a piece of graph paper is one means of looking for early distortion, hopefully before one loses vision. You can look at a door frame, and if the door frame is bent, you want to check out what is causing this. And the sooner, the better. you don't really want to wait until you lose vision.
And we have to point out that we're talking macular degeneration, which is your central sharp vision. You will still have your peripheral vision, but you're losing the sharp vision necessary for reading, driving, recognizing faces, sewing, etc. There are two types of macular degeneration, the dry and the wet. How do you distinguish these, and what are the different stages of macular degeneration?
Well, that's a good question. The dry type, most often people develop the dry type. That's far more common than what's known as the wet type. And the dry, as the name implies, there isn't any leakage of fluid, nor is there any bleeding. But when someone develops these new abnormal blood vessels, that is when someone is known to have the wet type. At the current time, the only form of macular degeneration we really can treat is the wet type. So you might want to know if you're at high risk, if these drusen are very prominent, you may be at such risk you might benefit from the use of vitamins. But the wet type is the one that can lead to a large loss of vision very quickly.
Now, apparently 90% of people will have the dry type and the wet type in 10%, but you always have to have the dry type before the wet type, and there's a progression. During that progression, what can people do in terms of nutrition and vitamin mineral supplements when they're, I believe in the early stages there's nothing much to do, but in the intermediate stage before it progresses, what is recommended?
Well, people at high risk, people who already have macular degeneration in one eye or have these prominent deposits, and this is only noted on an exam, people at high risk would benefit from the use of vitamin supplements. And over time, there have been two studies now. One was called the Age-Related Eye Disease Study. And more recently, we've modified and looked for newer treatments, and that was given the name the Age-Related Eye Disease Study 2. And we keep learning things. Originally, most people were given beta carotene, and now we find that people do better with other minerals and not beta carotene. Currently, they're working on a new vitamin that will contain zeaxanthin. We tested omega-3 fatty acids and found that really didn't help. So as a result of the most recent study, the AREDS 2, a new vitamin will be coming out very shortly.
And these are basically antioxidants in addition to the use of minerals. I believe zinc is one of the minerals pushed in this, as well as vitamin C, vitamin E in lower doses. And there is a formulation that is recommended by AREDS, but people should not just take it only under the recommendation of their eye specialist.
That's right. Only people that are at high risk will benefit from these vitamins.
We need to take a quick break for the news here on Health 360 Midday Matters. But when we come back, we'll hear from George, who wants to share an experience with macular degeneration that he experienced in Georgia. We hope that you stay on the line with us. And we also have an email written into us with a question that you'll want to stay tuned for. We'll break for the news right now, but we'll be back in just a few moments. It's 12:36, and this is 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne.
Professional help to rid the internet of embarrassing personal details, but not everyone thinks these pros can deliver.
the promises tend to sound like we're going to sort all this stuff out for you, and the reality is that nobody can really guarantee to do that.
The Business of Managing Online Reputations, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. Indiana Governor Mike Pence is considering options after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal of a ruling that threw out a state law stripping Medicaid funds from Planned Parenthood. Pence, a fierce opponent of Planned Parenthood during his time in Congress, said Tuesday that his staff is reviewing the case and he'll decide what to do after viewing his legal options. Pence says he's disappointed in the ruling, and he continues to feel strongly that taxpayers should not be required to support what he calls, quote, the largest abortion provider in America. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled October 23rd that the law targeting Planned Parenthood went too far because it denied women the right to choose their own medical providers. Indiana's only living Medal of Honor recipient says he hopes a new exhibit at the Indiana War Memorial celebrating his story will inspire future generations to acts of heroism. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has more.
Indiana native Sammy Davis received his Medal of Honor, the nation's highest military award, in 1967 after saving several fellow soldiers while being shot during a firefight in Vietnam. The Indiana War Memorial Tuesday dedicated a new exhibit to Davis, with Governor Mike Pence and former Governor Joe Kernan on hand for the ceremony. Pence says Davis sets an example for future generations.
In Sammy Davis, you find that humility and heroism go together, that it is possible to both be heroic and to be courageous and to be humble and to be selfless.
Davis says his Medal of Honor is about more than just him.
My name's on the back of it, but I know that it does not belong to me. It belongs to all who served and who will serve. And it belongs to those men that I was with that night.
Davis often speaks to school children across the state and the country, and he says he hopes the exhibit can help spread his story to an even wider audience. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Governor Pence will honor the first president of Israel with the Sagamore of the Wabash Award. The Candles Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Terre Haute says Pence will present the ceremonial state award to Chaim Weizmann on Thursday in recognition of his ties to Terre Haute. A chemist and early Zionist, Weizmann was president of Israel from 1948 until his death in 1952. Weizmann and his associates established the Commercial Solvents Corporation in Terre Haute to produce acetone to propel munitions for the Allies during World War I under a process developed by Weizmann. Terre Haute was selected as the home of CSC research because of its central location. The Sagamore of the Wabash is awarded for distinguished service to Indiana or its governor. You're listening to Midday Matters Health 360 on 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on 89.1 FM WBOI. It's 1240. And if you would like to write in with a question, you can email us middaymatters@nipr.fm. You can post on our Midday Matters Facebook page or give us a call 1-800-471-9264. We have George on the line who has a comment about an experience with macular degeneration. George, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm here.
Okay, and did you have a question or a comment?
Well, I wanted to thank Dr. Farber for his very excellent commentary on macular degeneration. I wanted to share an experience I had with macular degeneration several years ago. I'm 52 years old, and I've been severely myopic all my life. About 5 years ago, I started to develop myopia-related or nearsight-related macular degeneration, and I had to undergo several of the Avastin shots, and I was quite relieved that I was able to get the Avastin rather than the prior alternative, which was the laser. My question to Dr. Farber is he familiar with Dr. Ward's work with scleral buckling, where you graft tissue to the holes of the eye in an attempt to stop the continuous nearsight change in the eye.
Well, you know, there have been a number of attempts to try to affect progressive myopia. And I believe that really there is still work on that. I don't know that there's one proven best way of marshaling the progressive myopia. But as you point out, people with really high myopia can develop these blood vessels in the macula. Also around this area between the Mississippi and Ohio River valleys, people are more prone to be exposed to histoplasmosis. And that, too, is something that may occur in people younger and cause later on in life these blood vessels to grow in the macula.
Thanks for your call, George, and we're glad to hear that things have seemed to be looking up and that treatment has been working out for you. So thanks so much for calling into the program and sharing your experience. We have an email from Jim who had a question about eye drops. Do eye drops that help get rid of redness from your eyes that... Do eye drops that get the red out of eyes constrict your blood vessels in any way, and do they cause long-term vision problems?
Well, that's exactly what they do. People that have red eye may take some of these eye drops to constrict the blood vessels, and it routinely won't cause a problem with your vision, but help get the red out of your eye.
Mm-hmm. So there's no problem there of using too many
unless
eye drops.
They're abused.
Okay. Well, just thinking off the top of my head, if you're somebody that's maybe treating your eyes because of allergies or what you think is allergies because they're red all the time with eye drops, could you be masking a deeper problem at all?
Oh, absolutely. There are many causes for red eye. Mm-hmm. So certainly... I think, you know, the safest thing is to find out exactly what the problem is. There are people that have inflammatory diseases that really put your eye at risk. Mm-hmm. So I think the safest thing is to check and see if there's something other than just simply, you know, having not gotten enough sleep. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Farber, once the patient has the wet form of macular degeneration with the bleeding, the hemorrhaging, and the abnormal blood vessel development, there are a variety of, while there's no cure, the variety of treatments that you use medically and surgically. Could you describe these further, and including the the photodynamic therapy and laser photocoagulation, et cetera?
Well, over time, the treatment for macular degeneration has changed, and it has evolved from laser using the heat to burn these blood vessels to this photodynamic therapy. And that's something we used about 10 years ago for the most part. And now there's been the emergence of anti-VEGF therapy with Avastin and Lucentis, and now more recently with Eylea. And these medications, again, as we mentioned, help shrink blood vessels and prevent bleeding and reduce leakage of fluid. And this is employed with macular degeneration. And as you said, Peter, it doesn't really cure the disease. And so it's a very demanding disease. Frequently, patients and often family members need to return for follow-up continually.
And the injections are, as you said earlier, monthly?
Well, it depends, you know. In part, these medicines are usually given two, three times. And then, depending on how people are doing, we would follow patients monthly.
And if it's been stated that you may be able to at least restore some vision if there's been out and out hemorrhaging with these medications and tying down the leakage from these vessels, there can actually be some improvement in those people who are into the severe wet form of the disease.
Exactly. Some people are most fortunate and can actually have an improvement, which was something really unheard of up until the use of these medications. These medications are used in many vascular disorders. Previously, if a central vein or a branch vein closed, we didn't have any true treatment for a central vein. And if a branch vein closed off, capillaries could be disrupted and leak fluid. We would employ the use of laser, but if there was no good response, that would be it. And now we're using these medications for these vascular disorders as well.
Do you find you have to, do you often have to use the laser and the medications, or do the medications do the job pretty
well,
much?
Well, you know, with central vein occlusion, there is no laser treatment. With branch vein, it all depends on the extent of the damage and the disease.
And I think people have to realize the macula itself apparently does not have its own blood supply, but it depends on the choroid blood vessels underneath. So any disruption in those blood vessels causes a disruption or breakdown, a degeneration of the macula. Obviously, this is a progressive disease, and people are going to have significant loss of their central vision with the maintenance of their peripheral vision. What about people get depressed? It affects the quality of their life. There are things that you can offer. There's low vision care, for instance, to help people do their everyday chores and tasks.
Right, and that's another area where there have been new advances. There are these closed-circuit television systems. Many of them are large and can cost thousands of dollars. And now with the progression, with the use of digital, there are these handheld devices that one can actually carry around and use in help reading a menu in a restaurant. So there continue to be advances with technology, and also I might add the cost of some of these newer items that you can carry are much less than the older large units that you couldn't take with you anywhere.
And keeping the house brightly lit, using, you can increase the fonts on your computer or on your iPad, on your phones, on your Kindles, and then definitely a variety of magnifying equipment too. Driving, this is a touchy subject, and this is the individual with macular degeneration has to work closely with you to decide at what point they have to stop. How do you deal with this?
Well, really, it's the state of Indiana that has certain rules on what visual acuity is needed. And in fact, as long as you have one good eye, you're entitled to drive. So in particular, if there is a problem in one eye, making sure that you check the other eye and look for care immediately should there be any question of a problem in your only good eye, that's just critical in maintaining your independence with a driver's license.
So in many instances, the macular degeneration can remain in just one eye, or eventually does it affect the other eye? What are the
incidences? Well, there are various estimates. People with macular degeneration are more likely to develop it in their second eye. And a lot of it has to do with genetic factors, whether they continue smoking, whether they have these deposits, these drusen, and the full extent, whether they're pigmented, will determine the precise risk. But basically, if you have this in one eye, somewhere about 8% of the patients will develop this in their second eye every year. And as people are living longer, it starts to add up and become a significant risk.
In those individuals, would the AREDS vitamin mineral therapy be useful?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We need to take one last quick break here on Health 360. But if you have a question or comment, give us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. Or you can always post any questions or comments on our Facebook page, Midday Matters. It's 12:52. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and this is 89.1 FM, WBOY, Fort Wayne.
On the next Fresh Air, how opioid painkillers came to be used in the treatment of chronic pain, like back problems, and what the consequences have been. We talk with New York Times reporter Barry Meyer, author of the new ebook, A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. And John Powers tells us about his favorite films at the Cannes Film Festival. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
The president tours the Jersey Shore, and as scandals mount at the White House, comparisons to previous administrations, Nixon, Carter, Bush, are picking up steam. I'm John Donvan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins host Neil Conan for another round of Political Junkie. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Professional help to rid the internet of embarrassing personal details, but not everyone thinks these pros can deliver.
The promises tend to sound like we're going to sort all this stuff out for you, and the reality is that nobody can really guarantee to do that.
The business of managing online reputations later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on 89.1 FM, WBOI Fort Wayne. If you have a question or comment, our phone lines are closed, but you can email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post right on our Facebook page, Midday Matters. We have just about 5 minutes left in today's program, so if you did want to write in with your question, make sure you do it soon so we can get your comment or question in and read on the air. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and the studio with me is Dr. Matthew Farber, as well as my co-host, Dr. Peter Roth.
Thank you, Sarah. A recent study of quality of life, and on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 indicating the greatest impact on daily life, 71% of adults say that loss of eyesight ranks as a 10. But only 52% of adults 18 or older report that they've even heard of macular degeneration. So we obviously want to bring about an awareness of this problem, that it can be insidious, sneaking up without any symptoms, and the importance of routine eye care and lifestyle choices. Dr. Farber, what would you wish to add to this in the prevention or at least the early identification of this disease?
Well, I think covering one eye and then the other will help you become aware of something new or different. Certainly, if there aren't any good reasons to quit smoking, just helping reducing your risk for macular degeneration, that is another reason to quit smoking. And if you have diabetes, even if you can read the paper, you should have your eyes examined and make an effort to control the blood sugar. With floaters, new floaters are the key. When there's something new or different, you want to pursue it. And certainly with floaters, they need to be checked out immediately.
So again, everyone over 40 should have at least a yearly eye exam. All diabetics of any age should have at least a yearly eye exam. And any quick change or recent change in your vision should be approached by a healthcare professional.
I had a quick question. When can we expect our vision to kind of level off and stop changing? I mean, is there a certain age where it's okay that you kind of experience some changes in your vision, but that, you know, a certain age it should kind of level off and maintain?
Well, usually over time, your ability to accommodate or focus up close is continually decreasing from childhood. Mm-hmm. And often it's at about age 40 when you start to find you need longer arms.
Okay.
Or reading glasses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is something that continues onward.
Okay.
So there's never a point at which things level off and mm-hmm. stop changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a really good place to go for information, if you have questions, is the American Academy of Ophthalmology website, and that can be found at aao.org.
I think as in all aspects of medicine, when we're talking about quality of life and having a good lifestyle and making good lifestyle choices, again, not smoking, exercising regularly, wearing appropriate UV-blocking sunglasses, keeping your blood pressure in a normal range, controlling your sugar if you have diabetes, and control other medical conditions, maintain a healthy weight, avoid obesity, eat a diet high in fruits, vegetables, and fish. The Mediterranean diet here again can help with macular degeneration, and do not overexpose your eyes to bright sunlight.
We want to thank Dr. Matthew Farber for coming in and being a part of today's program. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 in HD Channel 1. We're streaming online at nipr.fm, where later today you can also find the podcast of this Midday Matters episode, as well as all of our Midday Matters episodes. That's nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University, and we're supported by listeners like you. Thank you very much. Taking a very quick look at the WBOY weather forecast, we do have a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m. today. Mostly sunny otherwise, with a high near 87. Tonight, a 10% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m., partly cloudy with a low around 67. Thursday evening, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 85. Thursday night, a good chance of some showers and thunderstorms heading our way, mainly after 2 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 67. We're coming up on 1 o'clock and fresh air is just moments away. And I should say that this is my last Midday Matters Health 360 episode with all of you. Thank you so much for listening. The past 2 years, I've had a great time being on the show, especially with you, Peter. And looking forward to a new opportunity that I'm pursuing in Birmingham, Alabama. But I will miss doing the show with you every week. And I'll miss talking to our listeners every Wednesday. So thanks very much for listening to the show. Sean Beter, our news director, will be taking over. This is 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne. It's 1 o'clock.